But let's just assume they love each other.
I think first advice is hopefully, you know, the family has done a really great job of, you know, establishing, you know, great relationships. But it is very common, okay, for folks to both drop out of ownership interest or come into an ownership interest in association with these transactions. Mm-hmm. And that is very common. You know, there's, you know, so-called drop and swap or swap and drops where folks who, you know, and it happens all the time where maybe those three investors together, right? And it's the same situation, just on a smaller scale of, hey, we're all in this. One doesn't want to be in real estate anymore for whatever reason, or a family's inherited it and they want to monetize, right? Because the one thing about a 1031 exchange is you are not monetizing, mm-hmm. right? Like that's the whole intent of this is an exchange.
Welcome to Planning Reimagined, a podcast from the planning experts at Robin Glenn and Aurox Investment Partners for wealthy families and successful business owners.
So now that we've talked about, you know, the basics, we talked about taxes, structuring, we talked a lot about depreciation, it's important to talk about some of the tax planning strategies that we can consider. And so we have a guest with us. Thank you so much for joining us. We have Jeff Bemis with us. He is the owner of 1031 Specialist and an expert in this space. So he's going to share some insights. Specifically first, Jeff, thank you for joining us. But if you can share some insight into your perspective on how 1031 exchanges come into play in this space, and the tax deferred growth component of the 1031 planning.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me. And sure, love to talk about this. So, you know, it's such a gift that the government has provided this opportunity to do 1031 exchanges. I mean, just step back. You know, a 1031 exchange is when you have property for investment purpose. You can sell that property, and even though you may have tons of built-in gain, likely appreciated, depreciation often or likely taken depending on your circumstance, you can swap and change into other properties, which can be massively beneficial, and defer all the related capital gains tax, depreciation recapture tax, and any other handful of taxes that would come associated with that transaction. You can defer that effectively indefinitely in the United States. So, you know, for someone who has a specific purpose, of which there's numerous reasons to do it, and change your portfolio, adjust your portfolio, there's all kinds, you know, there's really no reason not to do a 1031 exchange. And so as an example, you know, we have lots of folks we talk to who own land positions or have investment property that doesn't have a particular yield profile, or they want more diversification, or they want to be opportunistic in other markets or other property types. Those are all great reasons to want to do a transaction, and doing a 1031 exchange is critical to, you know, defer those taxes in one from the other. So say you sell a piece of property in one market and buy another property in another market, and it has a huge built-in gain of a couple million dollars or whatever the number might be, that can all roll into the new property, set of properties, or other products that I know we'll talk about.
That's awesome. Jeff, you know, when we have a lot of clients, business owning clients, that are looking to sell their business, you know, they were very thoughtful on purchasing the real estate that they're doing their business on, right? So when it actually, you know, when it comes time to sell, their enterprise value is extraordinarily tied up in real estate. Is, you know, 1031 still an option, kind of bifurcating the real estate sale from the business sale? And if so, is there anything they should be doing pre-planning wise to make sure that we have a effective or successful 1031?
I think completely. I mean, there's a lot of planning, I think, involved with a transaction like that. So absolutely, they can structure that to accomplish those goals. I would say for the purposes of this call, I think planning is everything. I would say in general for 1031s, planning is everything, even for a really vanilla, simple transaction because of deadlines and timelines that the IRS requires. But particularly if you're changing ownership structures, how you put together the actual real estate, changes in ownership allocations, et cetera, all of those can be handled and handled effectively, and just needs to be done in a planning phase and generally involving real estate attorneys and tax advisors to do that. But absolutely, there's benefits that can be achieved there. Businesses, any entity, a taxpaying entity, can qualify for a 1031 exchange. So those are all options that should be considered and can be massively beneficial.
Okay, that's awesome news for a lot of our clients who just don't, they think of their selling their business as kind of a bundle, but when you really dig into it, it's like, well, you have a deferrable asset here of $20 million. let's see if we can isolate that and get some deferral on that. So that's great advice. Appreciate that.
And Jeff, for the benefit of our viewers and listeners, it's always great to share real life examples, stories, as we call it, of maybe clients you're working with or have worked with in the past that have done it properly or not properly. But if there's some examples you can share, because I think that's just really beneficial as people see that. Sure. Oh, well, that's my situation.
Well, I'll give some examples of, I think, really tangible things for given what's the amount of wealth creation that's happened from the baby boomer generation, including my mom, right? Like, who has inherited real estate over the years and quite frankly will be passing along real estate to her heirs and the like. I'll start with a couple of tangible examples. There's a lot of land, and I'll call it lower yielding and less productive investment property that families have held for very long periods of time. So we're seeing clients who own land positions that are, want to be sold to developers or have a higher and better use in some other case, to where they want to swap into something that generates a yield profile. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely a huge use case. And I'll get into that in a second. The other is diversification and or changing of markets, which I touched on what I talked about earlier. Folks who have, there's a lot of concentration in folks' portfolios, has been my observation. And I came from, I'm a CPA by background, but then was in asset management for a period of time before sort of coming back to this business services with 1031 specialists. And my mom's portfolio massively concentrated into one duplex. So options she has is, there's certain market dynamics that can happen in individual pieces of real estate that create additional risks. And my observation is folks have very high allocations to real estate if you're in particular markets, particularly the coast, and they're not diversified in the property type or their geography. So folks who have unproductive real estate, such as land or things that have a productive use that doesn't generate a yield in the same way that they could with yield-bearing assets, they can swap into that, into, say something that generates very low or no cash, and in land, it's a negative cash flowing asset, into something that has a 7 or 8% cap rate and generates nice cash on cash returns for them. Additionally, folks who are concentrated into one duplex can find themselves in a position that they want to diversify. And that's where products like DSTs, Delaware Statutory Trusts can be, which are somewhat similar to how a REIT works, but slightly different. But you can become a part owner in a broader, larger property or series of properties through something like that, and create a more diversified, less concentrated, and ultimately goal being a safer portfolio for where you are in your life position, investment position, et cetera. And last thing I'd say is there's a lot of folks actively managing real estate that either they don't want to anymore or quite frankly probably shouldn't. And swapping allows them to move out of that dynamic where they're, chasing down renters and trying to figure that out, where you can, get into a structure where that is part of a management fee and professional management while achieving those other things I mentioned.
Yeah. Could you dig on that a little more? We have a lot of clients who, you nailed it, over the course of their lives, they've accumulated a good wealth of real estate. They're actively managing, they depreciated a long time, cost segregation, accelerated depreciation, they've done all the right things. Now they're carrying a bunch of low basis stuff. They are tired of chasing down renters. They're tired of kind of being in charge. Their kids don't want to take over. Our obvious answer is, hey, go look at a Delaware Statutory Trust and then, hold it, pass away, get step up, and then your kids can do what you want. And that's easy for me as a tax nerd to say, because I have literally no idea how they work outside of, I know you get 1031 into them. So can you give some examples of when that, well, first of all, you know, a little bit more on the Delaware Statutory Trust, and then ultimately, you know, what I, when it works, when it doesn't work, what are the, you know, pros and cons of rolling all the way into that and kind of setting it and forgetting it versus just paying the tax bill and moving on?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a few options, just so folks know, like there are folks who have, you know, there's, I'll call it smaller syndications that you can do with our call tenant in common interests that achieve that goal where you get involved with a real estate operator and do that. So those are options. And as are sort of these so-called UPREIT transactions where you can contribute property and receive tax deferred treatment and get into broader portfolios. But I'd say, you know, the Delaware Statutory Trust has over the last 15 years really evolved a lot. You know, it's basically, it is a individual or set of properties that are put into a trust. That trust then syndicates the membership units to investors. And I would think of it like a shareholder in a property. Now, inside of that structure, one, you know, there's some requirements because the IRS wanted, you know, and this has all been litigated at this point and been blessed. The IRS wants it to be sort of a static set or individual property in a trust. Mm-hmm. So you would, if you have one property, let's just give a quick example. You have a duplex and you want to get that diversification, and there's all kinds of property types, all kinds of sizes and different flavors. And, you know, to talk Delaware Statutory Trust, I think is a very long conversation to have, mm-hmm. but the short of it is you could, as a hypothetical, sell your property. You have a massive amount of gains and depreciation recapture and other taxes you would otherwise pay. That is likely not a smart move.
Right.
So you can, if you are looking to achieve a broader diversified or managed property base, I'd say Delaware Statutory Trust with really professional managers, which I think, you know, work with your advisor to really vet the deals that you get involved with, just to make sure you're in the right stuff. But you can go rotate hypothetically into one or a series of apartment complexes. Mm-hmm. So you went from one duplex, let's say in Los Angeles, to suburban Dallas, 300 unit, multifamily. I'm making up a hypothetical. And then you would go and exchange your property, and those proceeds would be reinvested in trust units in a Delaware Statutory Trust. And that trust owns the property. That property pays, there's a sponsor of the trust that has orchestrated the transaction. They do the property management for a fee. There are some fees that they have to put the transaction together. All that's fully disclosed and can be reviewed with you and your advisors. And then ultimately you come into an ownership of a 200 unit multifamily complex in suburban Dallas. Or you could go into a trust that has even bigger real estate holdings and more diversified if you wanted, or smaller, more specific, you know, the world's your oyster. Or you could go into two trusts, right? Like one by one manager, one from another, and rotate it. All of that just needs to be planned and thought about and worked inside of the time constraints that are present for 1031 exchanges. But yes, it can achieve a lot of goals. You go from active to passive. You go from concentrated to non-concentrated. You can go from one area to a broader set of areas if you so desire. And I think it can be a very helpful tool in that case, specifically for lots of clients. I think it is a really nice product now.
That's awesome. You kind of touched on this, but, you know, given the time constraints of the 1031 exchange, how easy or difficult is it to get out of one DST into another? You know, that's always a kind of problem my clients have is, you know, you're pushed up against the time. You're doing your best to work with your advisor to find the right droop or singular DST, but it's always a little daunting that you have to, you know, this is 95% of their wealth in some services. Okay, you got to find the perfect three assets to buy in the next 60 days. Go. So if you can kind of talk about, you know, if they could get in and out of these things as they find more attractive ones, like that'd be helpful for our audience.
Yeah, totally. Well, as a broader comment, just from, you know, Jeff Bemis, you know, himself, you know, liquidity, there's a give up in liquidity being in real estate in general, right? There obviously are market conditions where it trades fast and things are happening, but there's also market conditions like now where things don't trade as fast and move as fast. So being already in a liquid asset, the thing that the give up you're giving when you rotate from your own duplex that you own control, and let's say you own 100% in this example, is that you drive when you achieve liquidity, period, right? Like that is your choice. I want to sell, or I'm going to refinance and maybe it's appreciated, you can put some more leverage and take some cash out. You know, all those options are unilaterally your control. If you go into a DST, you are giving up that control. DSTs generally try and have a life where they'll hold the property for a certain amount of time. I'd say in general, it's about 7 years they'll hold a property. So DST trust units are not liquid. Okay. They are something that can be liquidated, but you don't want to, is what would be my comment, at least at this stage of where that product is at. So that is a trade-off that you are having there. And I just want to make mention of that just because of sort of the line of question that exists, whereas staying in your own property, obviously you drive the entirety of it. You know, the DSTs try and generate liquidity periodically. I would say UPREIT transactions create very problematic and long-lived liquidity problems unless you have specific contractual rights and which generally don't exist. So with that said, the time constraints are the following. You have 45 days once you transact your first sell of your real estate to identify three properties. And that, so you have 45 days, true days, right? It ignores weekends and holidays count. So that's why the planning matters. There's lots of DST product that exists out there. Right. And there's also lots of things you can do with respect to how you structure your close of your real estate transaction so that the clock doesn't necessarily start the exact day, right? So maybe you can do an option provision or some kind of contractual right. So with that said, once you do close on that first transaction, there's lots of DST product. There's multiple very established and good sponsors out there that can be, that I would get behind. Gotcha. And those sponsors have ready product going because they are pretty scaled in their operation now. So they have lots of different options that are available. And then there's lots of sponsors that are available. And so I'd say it's a combination of working with your advisor, your financial advisor, working with a real estate broker, just to understand what options you have. If you want to swap, let's say you have somebody who really wants to buy your property. You're like, what am I going to do with it? Mm-hmm. Working with a real estate broker. And then, you know, there's a lot of options of how you can explore. I'd start with my financial advisor on what DST products are out there and really get to know somebody who's really well-versed in that space to get behind a really trusted and track record, you know, has a track record sponsor. So those would be the comments I have. But yeah, you have 45 days to identify and 180 days to close your replacement property or your replacement trust units in this case. So, you know, obviously planning, if you plan in ahead, I'd just say this, if you plan ahead and you're thoughtful and you're before you transact, or you generally don't feel that pinched, would be my comment.
Okay. No, that's super helpful because, you know, we always think about these assets as kind of, in my mind anyway, you know, it's a 7-year commitment, like you said, and there seems like there are a million of them out there. You're out of time clock. So that's
there
very
are.
Helpful. Just kind of conceptualize how you get in.
Eyes wide open on that space. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of folks who I think are finding it an interesting way to raise capital, but there are really good sponsors out there that are doing the right things, have appropriate fee structures, and, you know, make tons of sense.
Gotcha.
So Jeff, question on it. I'm based out of Texas, and something that comes up a lot here is where maybe it's not a real estate empire, but it's a giant piece of real estate that's been in the family since the 1800s. It's the family ranch, and now the next generation doesn't want to deal with it anymore. So in those kind of circumstances, and there's also lots of hands involved where it's, you know, cousins and siblings and spouses of them who are now the beneficiaries of this. What strategies or what are you seeing families do in those circumstances where they just don't want to have that one piece of property anymore?
I mean, that one is that one is riddled with, as my father was a estate wills and trust litigator back in his day as an attorney. Those situations can get complicated if the family doesn't love each other a lot.
But let's just assume they love each other.
I think first advice is hopefully, you know, the family has done a really great job of, you know, establishing, you know, great relationships. But, you know, it really runs the gamut is what I would say. I mean, there are lots of structures. So with you do this with your real estate attorney, but it is very common, okay, for folks to both drop out of ownership interest or come into an ownership interest in association with these transactions. And that is very common. You know, there's, you know, so-called drop and swap or swap and drops where folks who, you know, and it happens all the time where maybe those three investors together, right? And it's the same situation, just on a smaller scale of, hey, we're all in this. One doesn't want to be in real estate anymore for whatever reason, or a family's inherited it and they want to monetize, right? Because the one thing about a 1031 exchange is you are not monetizing, mm-hmm. right? Like that's the whole intent of this is an exchange. So for the folks who want to monetize and they'll wear their own tax dynamic, whatever that might be surrounding it, that happens commonly. And working with real estate tax attorneys in advance for how to structure that so that, you know, the ownership of the current structure, which often is happening through either trusts or a host of LLCs, and they want to move those from certain ownership split to another because, you know, maybe one series of the cousins is just like, look, we're not going to stay a part of this, which happens all the time. Mm-hmm. That can absolutely be accomplished. And just, you know, you need to be really thoughtful with how you do that, because if you run afoul of this, the consequences are dire, right? So it's sort of the IRS has the same taxpayer concept where the taxpayer swapping needs to be the taxpayer, you know, selling needs to be the taxpayer buying. Right. And then how that's accomplished, there's all kinds of really well-tested, vetted ways to handle that. And so working with real estate tax attorneys is critical and can be achieved so that the folks who want to stay in and continue can.
And then you've mentioned this a few times, but could you discuss a little bit of the UPREIT structure and, you know, when it makes sense and how it compares to DST? Because, you know, similar to how I just say, you know, throw all your stuff into DST and get step up, you know, alternatively, you know, a lot of families out there have a nice size portfolio. And I'm like, oh, just push us through an UPREIT, get some, you know, op shares or whatever we call them, and then keep it moving. Like there's just this magical REIT buyer that's going to give fair market value for all their property, because it's easy for me to say. So could you kind of, you know, give us a story too on when that's
successful? I'm qualified, okay? And I've done a lot of structured transactions in my career, mm-hmm. and then, you know, just with what I did in sort of alternative finance before a few years ago, sort of getting, you know, really back into this world is, I would say, number one, the documents matter massively mm-hmm. in these types of transactions. So it is hugely important that you understand your rights and what you're doing and how you're doing it and what things you have specific to yourself. Because I think a lot of clients who can do UPREITs and have sizable portfolios have a lot of leverage right. in what they're doing. And so I'm gonna say it that way. And I'm also gonna caveat this with, I am not a massive expert in UPREITs. And I would, definitely consult your financial advisor, attorney, or CPA on specifics. I do know enough to be dangerous, though, so I'm going to weigh in here. Mm-hmm. Is UPREITs in general, you're swapping your property to go into an UPREIT transaction where you get operating units in a private REIT mainly that can swap into the REIT shares. Okay, so you have the ability to exchange later, and because of the nature of the nuance of the IRS code, you can swap into those operating units and defer your taxes. Mm-hmm. So if I contribute property, receive operating units, I'm now in a bigger structure, I receive my dividends from this enterprise off of its, you know, whatever yield profile, it's a great opportunity to add diversification, get professional management, and the like.
Right.
I would say, though, what concerns me and what I've been hearing about some of the newer structures too, is just be very mindful of your liquidity there. It's possible that you find yourself in a one-way trip where it's really hard to get out without being able to defer your taxes. So in a DST, which is going to create liquidity, like by the very nature of what they're trying to do, they want to hold it for a period of time and then they want to sell it. Like you will have periodic liquidity. Mm-hmm. It's fleeting and it's difficult, but in a 7-year time, you will get it. It is not clear to me that all these UPREITs have a moment in time where there's liquidity. And it's just something to be mindful of if you do it. Like, it might be that, you know, you can negotiate structures that give you opportunities in this, because in theory, you could get distributed stuff in kind from a REIT and continue to have your tax deferral and how you did that. But short of doing that, I think in general, your marrying yourself more than you might appreciate to the structure, unless you want to take a tax hit, which other opportunities don't require that necessarily. So that would be my one comment about it. The devil is in the details on that. That is such a broad comment. I don't want it to be taken as like, oh, UPREITs are bad and DSTs are good. DSTs have their own misgivings, you know, as well, which, you know, certainly consult your financial advisor around the trade-offs. But UPREITs are a great opportunity to get with great managers who can create diversification. And if you're really excited about who you're working with and how you're doing it, I think it can be a great opportunity and the like. Just, I think, just be mindful of what the liquidity dynamics could be in it. And then the documents matter is what I would say on that.
Awesome. That's extraordinarily helpful. As I said, it's just always conceptual. It makes a lot of sense. And I'm like, so if I have, you know, 2-3 flats in Chicago, like, how do I, who am I calling here to buy my things and give me UPREIT shares? Like, this doesn't, you know, you obviously have to be a pretty large portfolio, I assume, to get the attention of a REIT, but also, you know,
well,
what
they're doing it
afterwards
on a smaller scale now too.
Oh, really?
Just, you know, so yeah, that there's newer products that are coming out from large asset managers where it's effectively like it's a DST that moves into an UPREIT. Like there's things that are happening out there that are pretty interesting. Oh. And so smaller folks are getting involved. Historically, I would say call it 15 years ago and prior, it was really large portfolios.
Right.
And quite often they were doing it with public REITs too. Mm-hmm. So, but you need to be a big portfolio holder for stuff like that. But
exactly.
Yeah, it's happening more across the board, I think you'll find, as you poke more at it.
Oh, fantastic.
Thoughts, Albans? Super helpful. Thank you so much. Clearly you have a lot of expertise in this space.
No, this is awesome and such useful information for the folks that will be listening to this podcast. One of the things that struck me as incredible was that, you know, and it's hard to find updated numbers on this, but in 2019, there was $100 billion in assets, real estate assets that were exchanged using 1031 exchanges. So can you just touch on like-kind rules and just sort of, you know, how the operation of a 1031 exchange actually happens?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd be happy to. I think your number makes tons of sense. Like our best understanding and we've tried to look into numbers as well. I think somewhere between 10 and 15% of all commercial real estate transactions are 1031 exchanged.
It's amazing.
You know, and so it's much more than meets the eye. And because it can be done over and over and over again, there's no, you know, folks, particularly large family offices, all the way down to a small investor, there's really no reason not to, unless you have a specific reason to get out of real estate, right? For whatever that might be in your own. But yeah, like I'd love to touch on the process real quick. As you mentioned, you know, where I sit is I am a qualified intermediary. The IRS, to accomplish a 1031 exchange, mandates that you don't take constructive receipt of the funds when you sell the property. Mm-hmm. So you must bring in a qualified intermediary such as 1031 specialists, which is us. And we sit and provide exchange documentation. We provide counsel along the way, make sure you achieve the goals you're looking for, and ultimately sit in the middle and guard your funds. So we take constructive receipt of the funds. We use best practices on how those funds are handled. And we do, you'll know where those funds are. We use best practices with escrow accounts. You're involved with any movement. So we are using all best security measures that anyone would in this space to, you know, achieve that. So the funds come to us as mandated by the IRS because a seller to achieve a 1031 exchange cannot take the receipt of those funds. We do that underneath all of our documentation, of which you're a party to all of it. And then once you purchase the next property, assuming you do what's called a forward exchange, you sell your property. When you sell, you have a timeline of 45 days to identify and 180 days to complete. We would then, once you transact on your replacement property on a forward exchange, we would then send the money out and to purchase the replacement property. So that is where we sit. And obviously it's an important role, and we can be somebody who can be very helpful on the way, help issue spot, and help just be someone who really keeps the transaction on track and make sure you achieve your tax deferred treatment. You touched on reverse exchanges, particularly for clients with bigger portfolios and a lot of net worth. It fits in particular, but certainly there's a lot more that can find themselves making this work. A reverse exchange is where you do the opposite. This has been blessed as a structure that falls into the safe harbor. So a reverse exchange is where you buy the property, the replacement property first, but you buy it into a separate entity that is managed by the qualified intermediary. And so there's structuring involved, and you definitely are going to want to do advanced planning on making sure you have it all buttoned up. But you buy the property, generally done for cash. There are ways to finance it, but it's less available. So folks who are high net worth, liquidity is not their issue. They want to be able to be opportunistic or have reasons why they want to buy the property first versus sell first. You go buy the property into a trust run by the QDY, so that separate entity owns the property, and then you go sell your property after the fact. And then once you sell the property after the fact, you collapse the transaction and achieve the 1031 exchange. So, I mean, I'm sort of blowing through that briefly, but obviously a lot of planning and just working with your advisors to get all the structure where it should be. And while it's more complicated, it is a well-established and, you know, sort of relatively straightforward transaction. Though I will say, as much as I say that, there's always lots of nuance around reverse exchanges that are required. So that one takes more planning, but absolutely available and can be a great, great option to sort of flip the timelines on their head. So you don't sell something, sit on cash, feel the emergency. You can go find what you want to buy in advance, close on that, and then obviously try and line up how you're going to sell the property you're swapping.
And it's great that they have specialists like yourself. You know, be able to guide them through the process, because clearly, I know you simplified it for us today, but there's a lot of steps in the process and a lot of potential tax implications and issues along the way that they want to avoid. So if you can share, go ahead.
Yeah, just to say, I mean, we're a 1031 specialist. Like, you can just reach out and call us. You'll get myself or my partner who started the business. We answer the phone. So you'll get us direct, and we're happy to very early on just help people think about their issues and like, hey, what are your specific facts and circumstances? So you can hit us on our website, 1031specialist.com. Obviously, we've got our number on the website, or you can just look me up, Jeff Bemis, and you know, we're happy to help and looking to help. And you know, even if you're thinking 3 months, 4 months in advance, like we love working with clients all the way. And honestly, the clients who have that level of planning are always just great to work with. So, you know, hit us up, even if you just have questions, and we're happy to answer and give our perspective and help any way we can.
And we'll include your information in the description as well so that people can find you and contact you. But thank you so much, Jeff. This has been incredibly helpful and informative for all of us, and I'm sure our viewers and listeners too. So thank you so much for your time and for the expertise you shared.
Thank you for the time, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And please be sure to follow on your favorite podcast player. To connect with us, you can email us at hello@robinglenn.com or schedule some time with us via the link in the show notes. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok at @HelloRobinGlenn.